Like to bring the House Committee on Consumer Protection and Government Efficiency to order, and it's Tuesday, April 30th. We're going to start out with a public hearing on Senate Bill 196A, and then we'll probably shortly go to a couple of work sessions pending enough members to vote, and then we'll finish up with Senate Bill 644. So with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 196A. Bob, would you give us a brief description of the bill before us, named Senate Bill 196A?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 196A authorizes the director of the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department to enter into agreements with private nonprofit organizations to solicit grants, gifts, grants, and donations on behalf of the department. The measure allows the department to provide certain resources without charge or at cost, requires record keeping by the nonprofit organization, and requires an annual report to the Legislative Assembly by the department.
So if we could have up, we have three people signed up. M.G. Devereux, Bruce Barnes, and John Hoffnagel, I think. Guess we got one out of three. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Holby. My name is M.G. Devereux, and I work for the Oregon Parks and Recreation Department, and I am before you today to request your support for Senate Bill 196A. This legislation will enhance our ability to connect with individual, private, and corporate donors through nonprofit organizations to improve our Oregon State Park system. The legislation would permit the department to provide promotional items such as park passes, brochures, merchandise, promotional space on our website, office or meeting space for events and activities intended to raise funds for the benefit of the department. Relationships in the past have been hampered by an extremely risk-averse approach that, if these clarifications are adopted, will greatly improve the effectiveness of both organizations. Senate Bill 196A will clarify expectations and responsibilities for the department when entering into an agreement with nonprofit organizations whose purpose is to assist the department in soliciting gifts, grants, and donations for the benefit of the state park system. Gifts, grants, and donations raised by partner nonprofits are typically used to supplement the cost of capital and rehabilitation projects, such as the renovation of Vista House and Camo Chung and Company Museum, and programs such as the Let's Go Camping program, a recently established program to introduce families and children to camping and outdoor recreation in state parks. The amendments offered in the Senate also increase transparency and accountability by requiring 30 days notice to the legislature and the public prior to entering into an agreement. The proposed changes in Section 2, Subsection 1 are not intended to imply that other agencies do not have sufficient existing authority to contract with nonprofits for fundraising purposes. Rather, they are intended to clarify departments' relationships with nonprofits whose efforts are to benefit the state park system. I urge your support for this bill and would welcome any questions. Thank you.
We'll go ahead and listen to the other testifiers first. Yes. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
I'm Bruce Barnes. I'm from Pendleton, and I'm currently the chair of the Oregon State Parks Foundation. And with me is John Hoffnagel, who's our executive director. I have handed out a written testimony. Rather than read through it, basically it says we fully support it as it is currently passed the Senate, the A engrossed version. We have felt as a foundation for some years now that the relationship with the Oregon State Parks Foundation, with the Oregon Parks Department has been a very positive one, and we've worked well together, but there are roadblocks to us being as effective as we might be jointly in our relationship. And that this bill will greatly enhance the extent to which we can fully realize the potential for raising donations and funds to enhance and expand the potential of the parks system. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you like to speak?
I'm just here for moral support with these two.
Okay, then I guess there's no reason to introduce yourself. Got questions from the committee on this measure? Fairly simple, straightforward. I appreciate the department coming to my office and giving me a rundown on the bill ahead of time. So, and I really appreciate the support the foundation gives our state parks. It's a great asset that we have, and I appreciate your help in keeping them functional and pretty. So, other than that, no other comments. I appreciate you stepping forward and bringing this bill forward. We're not going to work it today, but it's on our list. So thank you very much. With that, I'll close the public hearing on.
One quick question, sir.
Oh, quick question.
Just a thought. This spells out specifically nonprofits, but was any thought given to opening this up to for-profits as well for really to try to angle for some additional resources that could help, shore up some of those budgets? Is there any reason why we would not? Maybe you've had that conversation. Maybe you haven't, but.
Chair Holvey, Representative Johnson, we have a separate statutory authority to accept donations from private organizations. Okay. And the challenge that we face when dealing with private organizations is making sure that we stay above board on state contracting laws and to make sure that we're not giving preference to any of those groups if we are looking at a project. But we, if folks are willing to step forward and provide funds or volunteer services, the agency does accept those.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it.
Thank you. So nothing prevents you from accepting gifts.
Representative Holvey, that is correct.
Okay, thanks. Well, we'll try this again. No other questions from the committee? I appreciate you coming forward again. With that, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 196A. And I'd like to open a work session on Senate Bill 189A. Bob, give us a brief description of 189A.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 189A allows the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services to disqualify individuals involved in prohibited practices that led to a license revocation from working in a managerial or administrative capacity for another licensed manufactured structure dealer for up to 7 years. Disqualified individuals may contest their disqualification through the administrative appeal process found in ORS 183 and may pay restitution to customers harmed by their actions as an alternative to disqualification at the discretion of the director. And this measure has no revenue impact, a minimal fiscal impact, and passed in the Senate with zero no votes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Committee, if you recall, this is the bill that Department of Consumer and Business Services came forward with the manufactured housing. Don Miner, I believe, all testified in favor of the bill. There was no opposition to the bill. So, with your indulgence, I'd like to go ahead and move this bill out. Certainly, Representative Smith.
The floor. Yeah. Okay. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 189A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Smith moves Senate Bill 189A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none, Samantha, can we have a vote, please?
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Kitty Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Vega Peterson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lively?
Excused.
Vice Chair Richardson?
Excused.
Chair Holvey?
Aye. Senate Bill 189A, having received the required votes, is passed to the floor. And is there an objection to putting this on the consent calendar? It does involve disqualification from licensure, so.
Well, was Representative Richardson not here and so on? Should we just have it go normal?
Yeah. Let's do it.
So.
And then let's give it to him to carry.
I'm with you.
Okay, so Representative Richardson will carry us in Bill 189A.
Teach him to be here.
Now close the work session on Senate Bill 189A. He could be carrying two or four.
Go for it.
So I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 204. Bob, give us a brief description of Senate Bill 204, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 204 makes explicit the exemption of Oregon Housing and Community Services from the requirement to offer property to other state agencies before proceeding with the sale of the property, and specifically exempts OHCS from the requirement that an agency retain mineral and geothermal rights in the property it conveys to others. The measure has no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, and passed in the Senate with one no vote, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there questions about this bill? I do note that an individual from the Department of Justice is here. We grilled him pretty good last time he was here. Don't know if there's additional questions for him on this measure. If not, I'll take a motion for Senate Bill 204.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 204 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Smith moves Senate Bill 204 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion? Questions? Seeing none?
Representative Doherty?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Penny-Geyer?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Vega Peterson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Lively?
Excused.
Vice Chair Richardson?
Excused.
Geraldi?
Aye. Senate Bill 204, having received required votes, is passed to the floor. And maybe we should have Representative Lively carry this one and get my vice chairs engaged. Not giving them the opportunity to vote no. So with that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 204, having received the required votes, is passed. And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 204. And I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 644. Bob, give us a brief description of Senate Bill 644.
Mr. Chair and committee members, Senate Bill 644 prohibits appointment based on pricing information of consultants for architectural engineering, photogrammetric mapping, transportation planning, or land surveying services when a contracting agency estimates the cost of such services will not exceed $100,000.
Thank you. And I think we'll start with Marshall Koba, Karen Tapman, and Dwight Harden. Good afternoon. If you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Certainly. Good afternoon, Chair Holby, Vice Chair Lively, Richardson, and members of the committee. My name is Marshall Koba, representing the American Council of Engineering Companies of Oregon. Today I'm here in strong support of Senate Bill 644. ACEC Oregon is a professional organization representing more than 110 member firms and 3,500 employees across the state. Our members range in size from very small firms to major companies providing design services to public and private clients across the nation and the world. Our members are fully in support of clarifying the intent and the use of direct appointment for projects estimated to cost less than $100,000 in design fees. This will help to ensure the best and wisest use of our limited and valuable public funds and will be very beneficial to small and emerging businesses and women and minority-owned businesses who are not able to compete on a low-price basis with larger design firms. Senate Bill 644 comes to you out of the Senate, where it passed out of committee 5-0 and 28-0 on the Senate floor. I think everyone has a packet. I just want to walk through that real quick and just show you what's back behind there. A few pages in, you'll see what others say. There's a nice quote from the American Bar Association, strongly supporting a qualification-based selection methodology, and also from the American Public Works Association. A nice letter dated March 19th from the APWA, the Public Works Association, which are the professional public works people. Also, you will see and House Bill 3316 will be discussed today. That was the number of the bill that passed last session. I think you'll hear it from our side and maybe from some other folks. I've highlighted two things in yellow there, and I just want to make sure that you see that, that the intent of this bill and why we're here really falls back onto an interpretation during rulemaking of what the language said in Senate Bill 644, or in House Bill 3316. I think those two sentences there, which show that will allow direct appointment of designers for projects that have up to $100,000 in design fees. We put it on there twice. I think our intent was clear. The Department of Justice, as they went to rulemaking, had a different interpretation, and that's why we're here. We had worked on the qualification-based selection process and legislation for a number of years, and we find ourselves back here on Senate Bill 644 to clarify that interpretation. I just want to make sure everybody understand really why we're here, and then there's also some letters in the back there. So we believe this is a technical fix to that interpretation. The intent is to provide a technical fix to 3316 from the 2011 session. It passed unanimously through both chambers and removed financial thresholds and expanded the use of QBS to more projects in Oregon. And QBS is a process. It's a procurement process for procuring design professionals. I'll get into more of that in a minute. But ORS 279C-110 lays out the process when procuring design services for projects over $100,000 in estimated design fees. For projects under $100,000 in estimated fees, they can use either, and our intent in the last bill was to have two options. One, you could, from dollar one, use a qualification-based selection process, or two, a direct appointment process, which is a much simpler, a much more direct process, and we'll talk about that in that process in a minute as well. It is the direct appointment process that needs the technical fix in Senate Bill 644, so that nothing over $100,000 is part of this conversation. This is entirely focused on the smaller projects under $100,000. And to give you an idea of what a design fee is, design is about, I think a standard rule of thumb, about 10% of a project cost. So if you had a $1 million project, you'd have about $100,000 in design fee, give or take. $500,000 then would be about a $50,000 fee. Standard, it varies, of course, and I've got two engineers with me here today who can talk more specifically about how that might vary. But it is QBS is a procurement methodology supported by designers and, more importantly, public works professionals. And the reason is, since the scope of the project is often not fully understood by the owner, the state or local government, and the design team, the QBS process allows a qualified group of professionals to team up and produce the best quality project for the available funds. QBS requires selection based upon qualifications and other factors important to the project owner, and then only after a full and understanding scope of work is finalized does the agency and the design professional agree on a design fee. So I just would like to stop there. The first comment about money today, and I know that that's been something that's been filling your inboxes, is price, cost, funds, money is a huge part of this conversation. There is no suggestion here that money, that there would be any work done by any designer or any project started without a full understanding, a signed document where everybody understands what the fee is. And the beauty of the QBS process and why the American Bar Association and the American Public Works Association are professionals like that support the process is because it takes out the lack of understanding and creates this team approach to project solving where people understand what the expectations are, what the goal of the owner of the project is, what the design team's responsibilities are, and how much you're going to pay for it. So that's something that has worked very well. The importance of quality design will resonate through the construction phase and for years, of course, through the life cycle of any project. And as we all know, design not only impacts the construction costs, but it also impacts the life cycle costs of any project. So the importance of quality design cannot be overstated, for every project is unique and with its own technical challenges. At the outset of most projects, it is sometimes difficult for the owner to fully grasp the complexities of the project or the variety of professional services that may be required to develop a solution. The qualified design professional fills these needs for that owner. We serve as the agent of the owner, representing the owner's interests in day-to-day dealings with contractors, suppliers, equipment manufacturers, and others, providing goods and services for the project. And for this reason, it is vital that the owner and the design professional share a relationship characterized by trust, respect, and effective communication. So I've laid out here the process for QBS, and I'm not going to go through it specifically, but as you can see, it's a three-step process, and it's pretty straightforward. Let's just talk about a local government would put together. They've got a project. The owner identifies the general scope of work. We need a bridge in the city park to go from that side to that side. The selection time frame is established, and this could be done by a board, a body of some sort with the local government. A request for statements of qualifications is published, which is then sent out to the design community. The bill that we had last session created tiers from $100,000 to $250,000. You only need to send it out to three people. If above $250,000 for a major project, then you need to send it out and put notice, say, in the Daily Journal of Commerce or something, so that the entire universe knows what's coming. So the statement of qualifications are received and evaluated. You get a score, and then you move forward from there. So let's say a firm got 97 out of 100 points. There you were a top-ranked firm. And then you begin to a conversation with those folks, negotiation, to better understand what the scope of the project is, what your goals are for the project, what you need it to do, and what services are required. And then upon a final understanding by both parties, and only upon a final understanding by both parties, a fee and payment schedule with the top-ranked firm are finalized. And if, and it happens, you are unable to reach an agreement with that top-ranked firm, then you have every right to go to the second-ranked firm. And so this is more of the QBS process, more of the formal process. Then the retention and an agreement covering the above is executed. So, you know, that's the QBS process, above $100,000. The direct appointment process, however, is different than that and much simpler, and that's what we're talking about here. ACEC and other design associations have worked on this issue for a number of years, and in House Bill 3316, we really felt like we hit the sweet spot for flexibility for state and local governments on projects under $100,000 in estimated fees. Our intent was to allow state and local governments the option to choose either QBS, which is that more involved process we send out an RFQ, get responses, rank order, or a direct appointment. And then, as it mentions here in the rulemaking process, that's where things got sideways. So the ambiguity has allowed some local governments the opportunity which they're using, which is a third option. And that third option then includes price on the front end. And so there sometimes, and there's a variation on this theme, but asking up front, we've got a project, how much does it cost? And that flies against the philosophy of what QBS was intended to do. This Red Book is something that we put together with the American Public Works Association. It's updated every 6-8 years. And, you know, something that we take very seriously, and there's a lot of effort and energy that goes into it. But the Red Book is the philosophy of how you hire designers. And I know that low bid is something, once you get quality design, you can bid the construction phase, you can bid the other things, but the design is the key that runs through this whole process. And why is the $100,000 level important? It is because prior to the 3316, the $50,000 level was the level that you could do a direct appointment, but it was in rule. So part of the agreement was, okay, we'll raise the $50,000 to $100,000, but the caveat that the selection process would continue to not allow price or price shopping. And we would never have agreed to this provision. I mean, we've been working on this thing for a good decade. This was a provision. We wouldn't have raised it from $50,000 to $100,000 if we thought price bidding would be allowed. And so our frustration with the interpretation by the DOJ is significant, but it's that's where we find ourselves with Senate Bill 644. So we believe this bill adds back the certainty and the clarity and removes the ambiguity. This will continue to allow state and local governments the choice between QBS or the simpler direct appointment process. This will ensure the best use of limited public funds and will also bring consistency, which is important, from design procurement process and consistency from jurisdiction to jurisdiction and from project to project. Beneficial to us on the design side, beneficial to local and state governments, and beneficial to the taxpayers. This will be a significant, valuable improvement to public procurement law in Oregon. So direct appointment really is as simple as picking up the telephone and making a call to one design professional, engineer, architect, land surveyor, and the others that are listed, and having a conversation. If a local government were to have a project or pass a bond where they had a pot of funds to create and to work on a project, the local government can call them up and begin a simple negotiation with that one individual firm, and it can be based upon they've worked with them together before, It can be based upon the fact that they are on a pre-qualified list, or it could be as simple, and I think the beauty of direct appointment for a lot of small, emerging, minority, women-owned firms is that it could be that they haven't worked with them before, and they want to give them an opportunity. And so the direct appointment process simply begins that way. That is how simple the direct appointment process is. Money is a huge factor. You have a conversation about scope of the project, allow the designer to go back and figure out what needs to be done, what permits are needed, what needs to go into the project, and then you can usually agree to a fee, and I'll leave that to Dwight and Karen to talk about specifics on how that timing works, but very, very simple. In conclusion, this bill has the strong support from the design community. APWA supports QBS, and most government, we believe most governmental agencies in Oregon already use QBS or direct appointment in the appropriate manner for projects under $100,000 in design fees. 644 ensures compliance among all agencies, and we'll pick up the outliers. We encourage you to support 644 to encourage the best and most appropriate use of limited public funds. Thank you.
Thank you. Would you like to go ahead and give some testimony? Either one of you. Yeah. Introduce yourself for the record, please, and good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, Chairman and Committee. My name is Karen Tatman. I am a registered professional engineer in the states of Oregon, California, and Nevada. I work for a firm of 60 people across a couple of states, but in Oregon there are 8 in our firm, so I'd consider us a small firm within this state. Our services as a company focus nearly completely on public agency projects, publicly funded projects. We don't do developer work. We do roads, bridges for cities, counties, transportation planning agencies, and states. So this is our bailiwick. We do services from planning studies through final design, through overseeing construction, what we would call construction management. So we see and over a couple of states, so we've seen and participated in all sorts of procurement processes for many different types of agencies. My firm, Quincy Engineering, fully supports the QBS process for services of any magnitude from the very first dollar. And the reason I say that is because we're business people, but we're also taxpayers, and we believe QBS should apply for all procurement of public services. We want public agency projects to be completed efficiently by the firms that provide the highest value, not by firms that will produce the lowest cost. Our business and our repeat business relies on two factors: providing excellent customer service and providing high-quality products. When we can provide both, we can and will get repeat service. If we can't do both, we actually won't pursue the services. It's that important. Low-bid process hinders our ability to provide good customer service and high-quality products, and here's why. A typical low-bid procurement process for under $100,000 or what used to be over $100,000 goes like this. The request for proposals comes out, and it arrives at our office in some way, shape, or form. Usually there's criteria for price with some assigned point value, usually in the range of 10 to 25% of the points. That's not insignificant. Even 10% is very significant. In this economy, a common project is pursued by, at least in our arena, 15 to 20 firms. So every point becomes extremely important. The RFP usually has to give you some manner to develop some sort of price. So they'll give you a preliminary scope of work. But it's often a canned scope of work that's a repeat from a previous project that seemed to be pretty similar, or it's very general in nature and has no specific information related to the project at hand. So good firms are forced to do this. We're forced to look at the project and decide, given the competition, are we going to develop the best scenario and price it based on everything falling into place just like perfect, dominoes tip, just exactly like you would want them to? Or are we going to consider what we think, based on our level of experience, is the most likely scenario? If you go with the most likely scenario, you generally are going to have to provide a price that is higher because you know that there's some level of risk and we're educated to that risk. Firms who aren't concerned about quality and are concerned about getting their work in the door will prepare their bid based on what they think is either the best case scenario, everything goes perfectly, or they just don't know what's going to go wrong, so they can't even plan for it. Again, their tactic is to get the work in the door and they'll go from there. This is a disservice to the agency, a disservice to the project, and it's a disservice to the taxpayers. It will lead absolutely to contract change orders, unanticipated work that needs to be renegotiated, and oftentimes poor quality work, work that doesn't get done because it hasn't been budgeted for. The later you get in the project and the more you get close to the end of the budget, that's when most of the quality control processes occur. And if you don't have budget for them, some firms will forsake that. And again, that's a disservice to the agency and the project and to the taxpayer. So in the end, the price that you're given that's provided in the proposal is, I'm not even sure what percentage of the time, less than 1% ends up being truly the final price, because it's based on not what really is going to happen. The agency prepared their initial scope of work in a vacuum, and in reality, the firms that are proposing on the project have prepared their price in a vacuum as well. They haven't been talking. So, as Marshall said, price is important. Price is important to us. Again, if we can't provide excellent customer service, which includes meeting our clients' budgets and meeting project budgets, then we truly aren't serving our clients. So we know our clients have budgets. And as I said, my firm, we do 99.9% of our work for public agencies, and everybody has a budget. We want our clients to have the confidence that they have the right firm and have us doing the right services and the right price. So we know that price is important, and so how do you get there? What you do is identify the criteria for which to define the best firm. Sometimes it's based on being able to meet a schedule. Sometimes it's based on having specific expertise in-house that makes you the best firm, or special knowledge. But we want agencies to identify the best firm, and that can either be through the proposal process or under $100,000 direct appointment. We are in full support of the direct appointment process, because in reality, it doesn't disregard cost. It just chooses the right firm first, and price is negotiated later. The most important next step of the process is to develop the scope of work together, discussing the unknowns and how to handle them. And for smaller agencies that may not have a lot of experience developing scopes of work, a firm can help them. But if they're concerned about a conflict of interest there, there are also groups like ACEC, AIA, APWA, all sorts of resources out there, federal agencies, state agencies that have gone through these processes many, many times, that would be happy to help. So developing the scope of work, discussing the unknowns, how to handle them, identify the project schedule, then we go back, we develop a price. We'll have one person in our firm who's taking the lead on that project develop the price. We'll also have another senior level person in our firm check that price. So again, we don't want to not meet our clients' needs. So meeting the budget is important, so price doesn't just disappear. And in the end, although it rarely happens, if the two sides can't agree to terms or the price, then the agency can and should go elsewhere. They need to have their needs met, but parting ways, really, it just rarely happens, because it's not in our best interest as a business to do that, and it's just not good customer service. So I just want to repeat, we strongly support QBS, and as a business and as a taxpayer, we always want public agencies and public projects to be completed efficiently by the right firms, providing the highest value, not the lowest cost. Marshall, I'll just say one more thing. Marshall indicated that generally the design cost is about 10% of the construction cost, and that's a good generality. When you think about a project as a whole, the design cost is about 1% of the overall cost. So price is a huge factor, but it really represents a 1% of the overall life of a very large project and the types of projects that we work on.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And you get the opportunity to go third, and I will hopefully ask you to be brief as and not cover information that's already been presented, because I do have a long line of other folks who would like to testify today sometime.
I understand. Good afternoon, Chair Holvey and other members of the committee. My name is Dwight Harden. I'm a principal with the firm of Geotechnical Resources, or GRI, in Beaverton. We also have a small office in Brookings and a small office in Vancouver, Washington. I'm also the president of the firm. We're an employee-owned 30-person firm, and our business is down to earth, really. We're soils and foundation engineers and geologists and groundwater people. And the $100,000 limit on direct appointment affects us quite a bit, because we're often doing projects or pursuing projects that fall within the $100,000 net. I just want to say first off that we really support Senate Bill 644 and the clarification it's trying to bring to the direct appointment option. We understand the full QBS process can be burdensome for local agencies, in particular for smaller projects, and the direct appointment option is a very efficient and low cost, low effort selection process compatible with that range of professional services. Marshall and Karen have gone through the process, and Karen did a great job of explaining some of the benefits and disadvantages of the benefits of QBS and the disadvantages of price-based selection. I'll just give you an example of price-based selection that occurred several years ago. I'll leave out all the names. But a school district wanted to do a geotechnical investigation for a new school. And they elected to directly retain the geotechnical engineer. That's somebody like us, who does the foundation and the soil studies prior to the work. And they did it on a cost proposal basis. They ended up selecting a consultant who submitted a fee that was roughly 25% of the other seven or eight firms that also submitted. And they selected that firm. And the firm did exactly what they said they were going to do for their fee. However, there were many problems encountered during construction and later, and it resulted in a lot of problems. That's a case where that being penny wise and dollar foolish, and I think that's a kind of a special case, but it's not totally uncommon. We just see that by considering qualifications and relationships and understanding of local conditions, and in particular local agencies, overall get a better product without the bidding, which is basically what price-based selection is. It's bidding, just as if you were buying stationery or gasoline for the trucks. I think an analogy is like this. Would you bid your doctor's services? Well, why bid the services of an engineer who designs the bridge, the roadways, the water supply, and everything else that goes into the health of the public and society and our citizens? That's about all I have to say. Everything's been said already.
Thank you. Questions of this panel? Representative Thatcher.
I guess I'm trying to get at what is, I keep hearing we need to make sure that municipalities or agencies are choosing the highest value versus cost. And then we heard an example of, you know, the person who bid 25% of what everybody else bid. So I'm wondering, in your view, what is really the problem for the companies? I'm hearing we want the government to do the right thing because this is better for them. But really, what is the problem?
Bidding.
The problem with low bid.
Speak your microphone.
that you're trying to address with this bill? What is the real problem?
The real problem we're trying to address is that the low bid process doesn't give the agencies who are procuring the services necessarily the best firm to do the job. If every project has its own requirements, just as if you were going out to buy a car, you and I would look for different features. We have to understand what it is we're looking for and choose wisely. You need to understand what creates the best value for you. You might need very special services. You might need very common services very quickly. You might need a firm to help you. Maybe you can pay for design, but you need a firm who has expertise in funding to help you find the construction dollars. There could be any number of things that you need, but the most important thing is to make sure that you find that the firm can meet those needs. So the problem for us is that we don't get work because price isn't the number one factor. It shouldn't be the number one factor. It shouldn't be as important a factor when choosing the right firm. You can deal with price. We just don't believe that price should be dealt with in step one. We want you to identify your needs and then find the right firm and then come to agreement on what it's going to cost.
Okay, follow up. You brought up the example of buying a car, for instance. And I do consider price. So I wouldn't be choosing a car per se and then going, oh, well, now tell me price. I guess I would kind of like take the whole picture, including price, into consideration. So am I understanding correctly that when you say they shouldn't consider price, that it's not part of the big picture up front, that you're excluding price up front and then you're talking about price afterwards after you choose a firm?
That's sort of what I'm saying, but let me clarify about the choosing the car and make sure that we're in agreement, because you could choose a car and you could say I want four doors and I want blue and get bids from all sorts of people, but what happens when you go walk on the lot and actually talk to the local car dealers is they have deals, they have other ways of meeting your needs and other specialties that you find out about by talking to them. So identifying the right person to buy the car from and then negotiating the price with them is another way of looking at it, instead of I just want a car and I just want the lowest price and you're not sure what's out there. That makes sense?
You.
I'm not sure I answered your
question. Well, I guess I would still
apologize.
Say, even in that context, I would still consider price in the whole consideration. that would be me.
And so, let me say, we do think that price is there.
Price is.
Absolutely, price is there. And we don't want to, it's not in our best interest to price ourselves out of the market. Absolutely.
Can I have 5 seconds?
Thank you. I really do need to move on to other testimony at this point. Otherwise, there's going to be some angry people that didn't get a fair chance to testify.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Up next, I'd like to have Scott Winkles, Gail Murray, and Jeff Nelson. Good afternoon. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Holby. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Scott Winkles, and I represent the League of Oregon Cities, and I'm appearing in opposition to Senate Bill 644. There are a couple things I'd like to respond to from the previous panelists. First, the League does not view this as a mere clarification and point of fact. We believe that the interpretation offered by DOJ is precisely how we thought House Bill 3316 would be implemented after the 11th session. Things are going according to what we believed would happen, and frankly, we opposed that. We had never signed off on Senate House Bill 3316. If the intent was simply to clarify the existing bill, the League would argue that the parties that were involved in the 3316 legislation should have been brought together, and there should have been some conversation and work group. That did not happen. Again, there is a process for revisiting legislation recently passed, and I submit that simply rolling your previous opponents is probably not it. Additionally, the league is struggling with a public policy rationale to insulate this one segment of the contracting community from the lease cost system. Oregon's public works professionals, and I would like to also say that the public works professionals that are work for cities are rather exercised over this bill. I don't know what the American Association is doing, but my inbox is full of emails from public works professionals across the state who are in opposition to this legislation. Those professionals have been successfully hiring engineers and architects for time immemorial prior to the QBS system, prior to the passage of House Bill 3316. We were never convinced that 3316 actually solved the problem in the public's interest. We understand why it would be in the interest of the A&E community to be insulated from lease cost, but we can't understand why it would be in the interest of the public or the contracting agency to do so. You know, we don't get these RFPs when we talk about lease cost. We're not, you know, they don't turn in a 3x5 note card with the price on it. They're responding to a detailed request for proposal from issued by the city that's detailed, that usually requires references, that requires essentially a responsible bidder. And I guess the, you know, I heard the analogy is, would you use cost as a method in determining a doctor? Well, yes. I would. I think if I simply need stitches, I'm probably going to go to urgent care or Zoom care to provide that service, and because it's cheaper, it is cheaper than going to the emergency room. If I have a more complicated issue or shattered bone or something, I'm going to use a different methodology for choosing my care provider. The same with contracting. For a complicated architect and engineering project, yes, QBS may be appropriate, and having that flexibility is a good thing. For a simple project, for instance, laying pipe in the same trench where a previous pipe was, it isn't necessary, and cost should be considered on the front end as a factor. If you're building a cinder block pump house, a very simple construction project, yes, cost should be considered as part of that selection process on the front end. With that, I'm going to turn that over to the rest of my panel. But again, this legislation is, from our perspective, is working as we believed it would.
Thank you. Could you introduce yourself for the record, and good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeff Nelson. I am General Manager of Springfield Utility Board, which serves electric and water customers in Springfield, Oregon. Thank you, Chair Holby, and members of the committee. One thing I'd like to point out is when the Senate addressed this issue, this specific bill, it did not go through the process of doing a cost impact analysis. So I do think that there is are costs associated with implementing this type of legislation. So I just thought I'd flag that issue. Another issue that's come up is with regards to rules and laws. And so as contracting agencies, SUB, as a municipal entity, has to comply with the law. And so if we implement a rule within our own internal contracting process for purchasing, we implement the law. If someone else implements a rule, that doesn't impact us. So I guess I'd like to flag that, because when issues such as rules are brought up, they're not applied necessarily broadly. Another issue is the fact that there are a number of projects that SUB does, for example, surveying, which are below $100,000, very generic in terms of the application, but specific in terms of the project. And so the concern there is that all of a sudden a $10,000 survey project, which is relatively straightforward, all of a sudden now costs 20 to 30% more because of the implementation of this Senate Bill 6244 if passed. And to clarify a little bit, my background, I have a degree in civil engineering and a degree in economics, so I appreciate the broader perspective in terms of bridges and roads and large buildings. A lot of times when you hear about QBS, and I think that QBS has merit, when you hear about QBS, you're talking about projects in the millions or tens of millions of dollars. But in a lot of applications with the thresholds below $100,000, the cost of a project is not 1% or 10% of the total project cost. It is 100% of the cost. It's a survey job. It's simple. And so cost needs to be applied in that type of application. This legislation is proposed is simply just a meat axe to the public interest. And so with that, I'll turn it over to Gail.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Holvey and committee. My name is Gail Murray, and I'm the Purchasing Risk Manager for Eugene Water and Electric Board, or EWEB, which is located in Eugene. I'm here today to talk to you as a purchasing professional on behalf of EWEB regarding EWEB's strident opposition to Senate Bill 644. As a public utility, we're entrusted to spend our ratepayers' funds in a fiscally responsible manner, striving to procure goods and services in the most efficient, cost-effective way that will bring the best value for the utility. This involves many things, not just price, not just a low bid or qualifications alone, but a combination of those things and other criteria, such as triple bottom line, project approach, etc. Personal services contracts, such as the ones that are covered under this bill, are not generally bid out with a low-cost bid as a result. They are generally done with an RFP process, which takes into consideration other things besides just low bid. It takes in other factors, as folks have talked about before. Senate Bill 644 is essentially taking an onerous law for public agencies and making it even more burdensome and costly. Taking the ability to include price or level of effort, which also includes estimated hours, in the initial phase of a contract negotiation along with qualifications put public agencies at a huge disadvantage. Some potential outcomes are projects may not be completed on time because of the extra time it takes to do these processes. Additional change orders may be incurred. Increased staff time on public agencies' part. All of these equate to increased costs that may be passed on to our customers in the form of rate increases. So I know you guys already had a little conversation about a car, but I had this in here, so let me just humor me for a moment. Just take it down a little path. So if you could just imagine for a moment that you need to buy a car to take your family on an important trip. You plan that trip, schedule around the car purchase, then you do your research on the internet to find the car that's going to best meet your needs for that specific trip and for ongoing needs. You find one that has the right you want to find one that has the right qualifications. And then you find out that there's quite a few vehicles that meet those qualifications. Now, all of this research that you're doing on the internet or however you're getting your information about this vehicle cannot include price. So you know nothing about how much is this car going to cost. So the outcome of the potential outcome that could happen with this. So then you would go to a dealership and then you would negotiate, which is what you do in a QBS process. You're negotiating delivery time, color options, special packages, and then you come to an agreement on what's going to best fit your needs. Then and only then can you find out what the price of that vehicle is, and then you can talk about price. If you can't come to agreement, so if you can't, why would you want to waste your time knowing if the cost, if you don't even know if the cost is within your budget, if it's something that you can afford to do? How would you determine if the price was even fair without any kind of a comparison? If the price was out of your reach at that point, you would have to start your process all over again, from back to step one with another vendor, another dealership, or another engineering firm. And so the time, so really, does that make sense from a time is money perspective? You had planned your buying time knowing that you would need it by a certain date, and now your trip may be delayed or not happen until next year. So this may sound crazy, and I know it sounds a little bit kind of juvenile example here, but this is exactly what the QBS process does to procurement timelines in public procurement. Senate Bill 644 intends to extend this process to contracts under $100,000, which currently are exempt and may be directly negotiated. This has a direct impact on construction projects at EWEB specifically, which is who I'm representing today. As a utility, we're faced with the same small window of construction opportunity as others, but in addition, we have a myriad of other considerations, such as federal and state utility-specific regulations, water levels, fish habitat, permissible in-water time for construction, to name a few. So we have a really small window of opportunity to get our work done. when deadlines get pushed out because it takes longer to come to agreement on a contract, an engineering contract or other, the whole project is in jeopardy of being delayed literally for another year. It may take, there's only that small opportunity, and if we miss it, we can't do the project until a year later. And when you think about how much has that cost a public agency, all the work that's been put into this process up to that point, all the internal time, the bidding process, the RFP process. I find that unacceptable, and it's not a prudent use of public funds. And also, if Senate Bill 644 is passed, the ability for us to utilize local small businesses for these less than $100,000 contracts will be hampered. Sometimes our projects don't require a large national firm for smaller projects, these under $100,000. And most of those larger firms have many resources, international, national, and if we were basing it solely on qualifications, it would appear that they would be the most qualified. However, it may be cost prohibitive and even overkill for your specific project. So there's quite a few well-qualified smaller engineering firms in our own Eugene Springfield area, and they would not be able to compete with the larger firms for resources. But they are perfectly matched and qualified and suited to perform the local work. Senate Bill 644 appears to have a chilling effect on a public agency's ability to contract directly with small local qualified firms. Again, this does not seem to be in the public or eWeb's ratepayers' interest. And thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? I'm not seeing any right now. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a qualifying question, I guess, and I think you each have stated it, I think, in different ways, but just for my own information, is that we're talking about what's in play here is our projects that are going to be estimated to be a value of $100,000 or less, correct? Because mm-hmm. we already, the playing field above that is established, right? Because that correct. Would be where QBS is the rule of thumb, or those are the terms of engagement for those projects. So we're talking about projects under which, as we had, if the multiplier is approximately 10% of the project is design and engineering, maybe we're talking $1 million projects, maybe whatever. The point is, we're not talking about skyscrapers here. We're not probably talking about CRC here. We're talking about smaller, locally beneficial, i.e. maybe the parking lots that need to be engineered and graded, the sidewalks, the utility lines, those types of things that in the course of business for your utility or for your city, these are the types of things you're needing, just public works type stuff, correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Up next, we have, thank you very much for your testimony today. I appreciate it. We have Bill Kirby and Mark Yeager.
Yeagermeister.
And let's get Greg Leo up, too, Boulder City. Good afternoon. If you'd introduce yourself for the record and hopefully not repeat too much testimony that we've already heard. If you've got other things to offer, please do.
Okay, Representative Hoovy, thank you very much. I'm Bill Kirby. I'm city attorney for the city of Beaverton. And, you know, much of what I've heard, I'm here in opposition to Senate Bill 644. Much of what I've heard today, I agree with in terms of qualification-based selection process is a good selection process for these large projects. What I want to do with my testimony is delve a little bit into the actual legislation itself. So I'm going to talk about certain provisions, certain lines, certain sections of the bills. And I've got two major issues I want to talk to you about. One is the first concern that I have with the Senate bill is that it weakens an important safety valve that cities have and other agencies have in negotiating contracts, and that's in connection with Section 1, page 2, line 16 of the bill. It proposes to strike the text as determined solely by the contracting agency from ORS 279C110 sub 5. Once again, that's Section 1, page 2, line 16, And the text is, as determined solely by the contracting agency. The common wisdom of QBS is that the QBS process keeps the owner in control of the project. There's a flow chart in my materials on page 2, and it's actually a flow chart that I think that ACEC provides, but it explains the QBS process, and it's a very good chart. I think it's an excellent way of summarizing something that can be somewhat complex. And right at the top, you see there, it's hard to read. I realize that. I have to take my glasses off to read it. The qualification-based selection process keeps the owner in control. And on the far right of that diagram, you'll see two nodes that are loops. And what those loops are is that, and it's been alluded to before, is that if you are in negotiation and you can't reach agreement about what the scope of the project's supposed to be, or you can't agree to the price, then what you're allowed to do is say, I'm sorry, we're just not going to reach terms on this. We're going to go to our second choice. And that is a huge leverage point for cities and local governments to be able to say, you're not the only game in town. If we can't reach a reasonable scope of work, and if we can't reach a reasonable price, we're going to go to number 2 or number 3 or number 4. We'll do this in a serial fashion. By eliminating this language that says that as determined solely by the contracting agency, I'm concerned that what's going to happen is it's going to be something that will make it more difficult if we are challenged on this issue to establish that the owner is in control of the project. So as a lawyer, I want to be perfectly clear to a contract review board or to a circuit court judge that it's the owner that's in control of the QBS selection process. And this ORS 279.110.5, as it is written right now, reinforces that fundamental QBS policy by that text that says that it's a fair and reasonable price of consulting services is determined solely by the contracting agency. Striking that text from the statute would open the door to the possibility that a court or contract review board would no longer give deference to the city's judgment of what's fair and what's reasonable, and instead would substitute its own judgment for that of the city. State and local governments cannot abuse the authority granted to them under the sole determination language. If governments act arbitrarily or capriciously in making determinations, the determination can be ignored as a violation of due process. Moreover, I know of no QBS procurement case in Oregon where this abuse of authority has been an issue. So that's my first concern. Please don't amend this section, ORS 279C110, by removing that sole determination language. It's important to local governments. It's what gives us some leverage in negotiations. Don't change that part of the bill.
Got it.
Our second concern, I'm sorry about this, but there's another one and then I'm done. Our second concern is that the bill needlessly complicates the negotiation process related to direct appointments. You've had some explanations about how direct appointment works. I agree with it very much. It's a simple process. It's efficient. It's something that needs to be in the law. $100,000 is a generous amount, quite frankly, for the city of Beaverton. In preparation of coming here today, I took a look at our materials in terms of contracts that we let. There's a couple that are over $100,000. There's not very many going back to 2010. Most of them are $50,000 and under. Some of them are $3,000 contracts for surveyors to go, would you go survey that lot over there? We need to know where the property lines are. We're not going to use a QBS process for that. We're going to get on the telephone call or we're going to send an email. And as someone said earlier from the ACEC group, it can be as easy as one telephone call, two telephone calls, and you have a conversation. Pricing is always an issue in the QBS process. And with direct appointment, what's happening, it's still within the QBS process in my mind because it's a three-step process. If you go back to the diagram on page 2 of the materials, you'll see on the left it has, you know, step 1 is where you rank. In direct appointment, you don't do that step, or at least that step is very much abridged. You look at a list of who your people are that you have, you know, of interest of doing work for your city in certain areas, like engineering or surveying or whatever it might be. So you really, in a direct appointment process, are starting the process at step 2, which is negotiating the contract. What's the scope of work? And right after that is, what's the price? So the conversation could be, could you go survey that lot over there? Are you available to do that this week? No. Oh, well, I guess I'm going to call somebody else. That's a QBS process. It's very abbreviated, but it's a QBS process. The next thing that happens is you go, well, no, I am available. Great. What do you charge? It's all in one telephone call. And you're done. And you go out and you do your task. what's happening here, in my opinion, is that there's a confusion that's occurring. Price is not considered in the QBS process at stage one. That's I think everyone agrees that in the formalities of it, you look at the qualifications. Let me find someone who's really good at this, not someone who's just cheap. But when you're doing direct appointment, you're skipping over that largely. I don't think entirely, but largely you are. And you're moving right into contract negotiations. Give us the freedom to negotiate a contract. You're going to be talking about price fairly early on the conversation. If not in the first minute, maybe in the second minute, and then the telephone conversation's over in 3 minutes. It's not that difficult. It doesn't need the formality that we're talking about. I think there's probably something there that is irritating ACEC with some jurisdictions. I don't know quite what it is, but this isn't the solution to that problem. So what I'll just conclude, because I know your time's valuable. We don't support the bill. We very much think that it undermines the ability of jurisdictions like the City of Beaverton to negotiate in a QBS environment. There's a lot of, frankly, mistrust of QBS because price isn't on the table up front. It's delayed. And what concerns me about this legislation, particularly in regard to those two sections, Sections 8 and Section 9, where this language is going to come in that talks about you shall not negotiate price, is that it's very broadly worded. And it says you can't discuss price. If you look at it, it's in my materials, but as it is worded, as a lawyer, I can tell you that it is something that could be perceived as being read as a contracting agency may not use pricing information as the basis for a direct appointment. What this says literally is you can't concern yourself with price at all in the direct appointment process. That's ludicrous. What they mean to say is somehow you're supposed to do something that's QBS-like, and I don't know what it is that they have in their mind, but this isn't the solution. I don't want a law that says that we can't consider price in the QBS process. At stage two, stage three, somewhere in that process, you consider price. And what this says, if you read it literally, if you read the text as it is written, you get to this concern of mine that ORS 297, 110, 8, and 9 would have a limitation placed on them that would say that you cannot consider pricing information as the basis for a direct appointment. So those are my two concerns, and for those reasons, we oppose this bill. Thank you.
Chair Holby, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Greg Leo. I'm here today on behalf of the City of Wilsonville. The testimony the Mayor of Wilsonville has signed is in the record. I'd also like to thank Eric Mendy, who is in our contract staff, who, as a private citizen, has put an excellent letter in the record, which explains in the real world how he, as the purchasing officer, would have to deal with these provisions. We recommend that do not pass on Senate Bill 644 for all the many good reasons. It's hard to improve upon the expert testimony we've just heard from the City of Beaverton, but we would say that price is important. In a time of tight budgets with smaller projects, every dollar counts, and being an efficient steward of public money is important, and this is an important flexibility. This also will create additional workload for local government staffs as they work through the contracting process, and frankly, we do think it is a deterrent to discourage, that it discourages competition for small businesses who are trying to gain market entry. So in a perfect world, I think this is a bill that would not go forward. Rather, our contracting officers will work through the current process and do the best we can to get the most we can for the public out of the few public dollars that we have. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Holby, members of the committee. My name is Mark Yeager. I'm the Utility Services Manager for the City of Albany. I've entered into the record a letter from the Public Works Director from the City of Albany, Mark Shepard. I'm not going to go through the same things that these guys just talked about, but I agree with the things that they said and the representatives from the League of Oregon Cities, EWEB, and SUB. I would point out a couple of things for you to consider. One was, or is, that I find it interesting that the folks from ACEC, that group that was up here, emphasized to you that, you know, sometimes these agencies don't know what they want, and they need to have our assistance in order to figure out what the scope of work is on the project. frankly, I found that a little bit insulting. You know, we generally have a pretty darn good idea what we want, and we also know when we don't know what we want, and we solicit help in that process. So to force us to go into a process where we're not allowed to consider price until we get the most qualified, which, as that has been testified, may often be exclude a local smaller firm, it creates a burdensome process for us, and it frankly it doesn't help in giving us producing the best value. The other thing I did want to emphasize, even though it was mentioned just a little bit, the current procurement process that we use, it's a qualifications-based process that includes price. It's not a low bid process. We don't go and ask for a low bid. It's a qualifications-based plus a price consideration-based process. And the reason why it does that is because we need to get a sense of whether or not the people who are proposing on the project have the same idea that we do as to the scope and extent of the project. If they have huge number of hours to do tasks that we know don't take that long, we understand that we don't have agreement on what the scope of the project is. So I appreciate your time. Thanks very much. We're available for comments or questions.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Questions from this panel? Not seeing it. Thank you very much for your testimony. Michael Eisen and Mike Besner.
Chair Holby, members of the committee, Michael Eisen with the Association of Oregon Counties. This has probably been one of the most thoroughly examined bills we've had probably in this committee this session, so I'll be really brief. Association of Oregon Counties is also opposed to Senate Bill 644. We were a part of the groups who are working on or interested in House Bill 3316 as it was going through the process in 2011. We actually were comfortable with the bill as it, more or less comfortable with the bill as it worked through the different amendments and sort of ended in the process of the under 100,000 direct appointment process, 100 to 250, the more informal QBS, and then full-blown QBS after that. So we ended up being neutral on the bill. But that was with the understanding that the under 100,000 direct appointment process, you could take price into consideration. So we actually do agree with the Department of Justice's interpretation of where the bill is and would like to see it stand as it did in 2011, and then see how this works itself out over the next few years as folks get more comfortable implementing the process that was put in place. In fact, just to make sure that I wasn't misremembering, I went back and listened to the final hearing on House Bill 3316 as it was in the Senate side, and even one of the proponents spoke in terms of an exception from QBS for under 100,000 that would allow small and emerging businesses a chance to compete on cost, and then one day maybe be competing for the bigger projects that were the full-blown QBS. So we're comfortable with the process as it is right now. Do not want to see the changes proposed in Senate Bill 644 go into effect. And with that, I'll turn it over to my colleague from Clackamas County.
Chair Holvey and members of the committee, my name's Mike Besner. I'm here on behalf of the Clackamas County Department of Transportation. I am the engineering manager. I am a PE. And the gentleman from the City of Albany took most of my talking points, so I won't reiterate them, but I fully support everything he said, hit on some good themes there. You know, this allows us to be efficient and do more with less. Clearly, if we're going to hire somebody to design something complex, a bridge, a big road project, first of all, it's going to be over $100,000, but we're going to hire the best firm. We're not going to go with a low bidder. Frankly, even with the direct appoint, I don't understand why anybody, if they had eight proposals and one of them was 25% of the next, why they would hire the 25%. That makes no sense. Much like you said, we simply use it as a good part of knowing we are getting that overall value. And when we do get quotes, we're usually contacting a few firms that we already know can do the work. They're qualified. And we're just trying to stretch those dollars just a little bit further for these more mundane routine tasks. And, you know, frankly, we do understand our scopes, and if we don't, I think we'd have a harder time understanding the fees that get submitted, which are usually a little more complicated, frankly, than the scopes. So rather than take up more of your time, the people before me made a lot of really great points. I just want to say that we do oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Thank you very much for being here today. We will now hear from Cindy Robert and Dave Simmons.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert, and I represent the American Institute of Architects, who support this bill and have actually found some things taken absolutely out of context, saying that we're opposed to it, because we're not. And a couple things I just want to clarify. First of all, Mr. Kirby from the city of Beaverton sat here and talked to you about what a perfect process would look like and how the phone gets picked up and things are taken care of in a couple minutes. That is exactly what we thought this bill did. I'm sitting back here. I think you've seen me walk over and talk to Marshall a couple times because I'm like, wait a minute. Did we not get the language right? Because what Mr. Kirby was saying is perfect in the city mindset is exactly what we were aiming for. Did we get the language wrong? So now we're wondering, did we get the language wrong? And frankly, Mr. Chair, we would have known if any of these opponents had come and spoken on the Senate side to the language that was there. Instead, that bill was allowed to pass with us, again, describing what we believed the bill did to the Senate members and having the Senate pass the bill here, thinking it did exactly what we said. If what they're saying on the interpretation is true, well, we need to fix that. Because Mr. Kirby's idea of how this works, his optimal idea, is exactly what we want. It's really important to note two things, and I'll just be very brief, two points. First of all, of course, price is part of the equation. It's just not the first thing. It's the second thing. It makes logical sense to first talk about skills and qualifications, second, talk about scope, and third, negotiate a price. Someone said this is just one segment of society and contracting. Well, that's because it's one of those things that's not fully determined. Is there an idea of what it looks like? Yes. But it's not fully determined. If it was, you would never need an architect. There's art in architect. And we really believe that. We come in and we talk about different things you could do to get LEED certification, to change the angle of your building, to get better sunlight. Those are the things you talk about in scope that aren't in an original RFP. We just want to talk about those kind of things first and then sit down and talk about price. Federal government's done it this way since the 70s. The state of Oregon's done it this way since the early 90s. That's all we were looking for at the local level. And why on those 100,000 or lower projects is it so important? First of all, we know it's less than $100,000 in design costs because everybody knows darn well how much these things cost. We know the range. No one's blind on what the costs are going to be. That's how we know what level it falls in. The less than $100,000 direct appointment is what we're adding in to QBS. We're trying to add in direct appointment because it's easier. It's just as Mr. Kirby described. It makes life easier for the cities. But from my perspective, and Representative Thatcher is always so good at making sure to say, what's the problem that it solves from your perspective? One of the problems it solves from the architect's perspective is we're small firms. 2 years ago, we had 40% unemployment. Our firms are very small. Some are emerging, some are minority-owned, some are women-owned. But for us, this is good. At no time, any time, in any world of procurement, could you tell me that small firms win in a low-bid process? They don't. They don't have projects to cover the cost, to spread the cost, to spread the people and the production. When it comes to small, minority, and emerging businesses, QBS and direct appointment, which is a simplified QBS that we thought we did for the cities, is really the only answer. Mr. Chair, I ask you if we need to fix this to make sure that Mr. Kirby's ideal and our ideal are the same, and we didn't get the language right, we absolutely will do that. Thank you.
Okay, just to clarify then, when Mr. Kirby said that he's concerned that ORS 297, 110, 8, and 9 basically say that you cannot consider price and direct appointment. That is not what your intention was.
No, we just don't want to consider it first. And so I'm reading this, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, did we create a loop? Because we were referring on direct appointment back to other forms of QBS. It's that word notwithstanding that you're seeing at the top that always makes it difficult. We want it to be considered, just not first, just as the rest of QBS is. In the rest of QBS, price is considered, and actually on your bill, on the very first section one, paragraph one, it says a contract in the agency may solicit or use pricing policies and proposals or other pricing information, blah, 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 after the contract agency has selected a candidate, not contracted with it, selected one. That's how you rank them and go back and talk fee. That's what we wanted here, too. That's the language that we thought and would have liked to have known on the Senate side that we didn't quite grasp the right way. We believe we did, but if we have another discrepancy in this, we got to get it settled this time.
Okay. Just while we're talking about language, the other concern Mr. Kirby had about the deletion of wording, which essentially looked like it was taking the discretion from the contractor, the contracting agency, away. It was that an intentional
Mr. goal? Chair, thank you for that question. I have that underlined. That's on page 2. It's lines 14 through 16. And this is one of those things that you all know. Sometimes you get something back from legislative counsel where they're actually just cleaning up language. That's what that was in their minds. Again, if it didn't get there, we didn't know. We didn't know there's a problem with that. But if you look at what's been added and what's been deleted, it says the exact same thing. It just is in reverse order. So if that's problematic, again, we had no intention of saying, oh, cities can never consider. I work for a city. We never wanted to do that. I wouldn't be that awful to them. So that was not our intention. Again, we did not know this was problematic.
Thank you. Mr. Simmons?
Yes. Dave Simmons with ACEC, president-elect, and I work for CH Tome Hill. As Cindy has said, we're not attorneys, we're engineers, we're architects, and we're just trying to get this to a situation that to clear up some language. I've heard testimony that basically what we're trying to do is we're not trying to impact the ability of agencies to direct appoint. They can certainly direct appoint. We're not saying that with this change that they can't direct appoint. We're not saying they have to use QBS for under 100,000. The issue is not to consider cost in the selection of the firm, but they certainly retain all authority to control their costs through the negotiation process. We heard representatives from the local governments identifying that they know typically what these services should cost if it's a straightforward scope of work. Well, in that case, when the firm submits the fee, if they're not comfortable with it, that's a process of negotiation, and that's something that consulting firms are used to dealing with. There is that ability and understanding and that mutual agreement on what the level of effort needs to be, then that happens during the negotiation process, but not as prior to not as part of selecting the firm. What we're seeing is, and we're not trying to offend the local governments by saying is that they don't know what they want. What we're saying is that what we're seeing, the biggest problems for A&E firms in this process of under 100,000 is that the scopes that they're asked, that the scope of work that's in the proposal isn't clear. So what they end up with is an apples and oranges in the range of services. And it's in those cases that creates, it's unfair, we believe, for the communities, for the A&E firms in that situation, in that we're spending a great deal of effort, but we're not operating on the same playing field in terms of assumptions. We're forced to make assumptions about what that work is in developing our price, and we don't even get a chance to communicate with the agency about what it is and why we came up with a price that we did. So that's the clarification. So that's all I have to add.
Thank you. Are there questions for this panel? Representative Thatcher.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I actually do. I remember you saying earlier that when it comes to competing on price, that the minority women in emerging small businesses wouldn't win. How do you think they would win based on best package because they don't have the experience that may be criteria for this project? They might not have some other things, and so the only thing they have is price. So, I mean, do you see some disparity between those two statements?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, you know, actually, I can see that you would have some of those businesses come in and say that it's easier for them on price than it is on qualifications. But a majority of my members say that qualifications is what is easier for them to compete with and, in the long run, more realistic, because your qualifications are what they are. Your low bid often ends up in change orders and stop work because of other problems that were not known about because you weren't qualified to do the work that end up making it cost more anyway. So while some small businesses might say they like the low bid, most of my members, all my members, would say, and I have 1,400 architects in Oregon, they would say that if you try to low bid and you're a small firm, it's so hard, especially on the bigger firms that have different subcontractors and different abilities, different already purchased software programs, et cetera. So they would say that they don't think so, and they'd rather compete on their qualifications. You know, the one thing that we forget, too, Representative, is that the qualifications are whatever the contracting agency says it is. So if it's that you've worked in a sewer pipe area with big rocks before, they can put that as one of their selection criteria, and they can rank that. This guy's worked on the coastal area bridges before because they have a different dynamic. They have different weather conditions. The selection committee, the agency, gets to decide what are the qualifications we're looking for. It's not always just who's done this the most and who has the biggest projects. Sometimes it's that particular need they have to meet a certain geographic, demographic criteria that is the thing that gets the people with to have more points.
And follow-up, Mr. Chair. I guess, okay, so back to your earlier statement regarding competing on price. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it make sense to include price with what you're offering? This is my package for this, and then you can look at the value up front rather than going, well, I like the Lamborghini the best, but, you know, maybe for the money, the Hyundai's
better. Why did you waste my time? Because I can't afford a Lamborghini. I totally understand that. Again, when we're talking about design services and we're talking about less than $100,000, we pretty much know the range, and the range we use for bidding is 6 to 10% of a project is the design fees. So no one's really in the blind on the range of costs. That's a big fallacy. We all know about where it will fall. The question really comes down to, on the price, is if you lead with that, that's what people tend to look at first. If you lead with qualifications and someone looks at your qualifications and says, I like this person, I want to talk to them about how much it would cost and what the scope is and what they can offer me for that price, which is another part of scope, what am I getting for that price, we just think that's a better way to go about it. Again, if this bill in any way says cost is never considered, it needs to be fixed because that was not the intent. I'm not sure it says that, but if it does, it needs to be fixed.
And one more follow-up, if I may. Going back to the criteria that an agency can set, do you have any concerns about that being subjective or designed around obtaining a particular firm because they set the criteria to, you know, any company that, I don't know, starts with a T and ends with an R? I mean, we'll hire them. But you know what I'm saying? That wouldn't go down to that level, but you know what I'm saying.
No, Representative, I know exactly what you're saying, and it can be concerning. I mean, if we're going to build a park and we want to have someone who's built the perfect picket fence before and we already know who that firm is, yes, that's problematic. The one thing I will say about this legislature, they've been very clear about the transparency in contracting, so that information's always posted. Someone would know if something was taken that blatantly out of context, but it's something we have thought about.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm still having a hard time understanding what the pushback is here on against the opponents, because if I'm a city council guy, you know, I've got an engineering department or public works department, and they have a budget that they have to work within. They have X number of dollars. They got finite budget. But they have projects that they need to accomplish within those budget constraints. So any RFP is going to say, here's what we hope to accomplish, mm-hmm. here's our budget, give us your bid. Mm-hmm. What's wrong with that?
Go ahead.
We don't have a problem with that. In fact, that's part of that communication is that it works best when the client says what they have to work with, and that makes the beginning of the communication clear.
No, but the point that you made that I think is really clear is, why wouldn't I just ask for the price out front, knowing how much
you would ask for a price? There has to be some descriptive language,
right?
Okay, I have to tell you what I'm looking for a price on. I think that's all these city people are saying, but somehow they, in the statute here, it says price can't be any consideration. All we're going to advertise for is the most proficient engineering firm in ditch engineering,
mm-hmm.
or something.
Mr. Chair, Representative,
I don't understand
the intent is for price to not be considered first. And when you respond in QBS, when you respond with an RFP, you list your qualifications. They look at your qualifications and say, come on in, let's talk a little bit more about scope and talk about price. So direct appointment is really no different, because you pick someone based on their qualifications. You either found them on the list, you met them at the restaurant last week, they've done this kind of work, you heard them talking about it, and you call them and say, hey, come in, let's talk about scope, and then let's talk about price. But the difference is, this is clearly 100% the most simplified piece of what this bill was supposed to do. It was supposed to make it so you could go out and ask one person and talk about price with them, but you couldn't go out and talk to five people at the same time and say, give me your price. That's all we're trying to avoid. Bless you. That's what we're trying to avoid.
Follow up?
A comment and a question. I'll question with first is, was anybody in that Senate committee awake the day that this bill was heard? Question number one. My other comment would be, I sense a work group.
I was going to end with
thank
that
you, Mr.
note
Chair.
As well. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson,
yeah.
I wish that the opponents had been clearer so that we could have cleared a lot of this up and not wasted a lot of people's time and had exactly what we needed here in front of you and all agreed on what it said. That's always hard when there's discrepancies. I'm not sure there are, but the fact that they've raised these flags, I understand you have to care about.
Certainly. We have proponents for a group, and we have the counties, the cities, Beaverton, Albany, and others, if we were to call, that will follow suit with their organization that are against it, and yet it came here so clean. It sounds like you really do need to make contact with each other, and before the next hearing, it would probably be a good idea to either have changes or an agreement on what the language should be, or else I would say that it's got trouble.
Mr. Chair, we'll bring you that language.
Okay, thank you.
Oh.
Representative Kinkar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to concur with my House colleagues. We always like to take the opportunity to dig it to the Senate when we can. I mean, I do note that on OLIS there was both verbal and written testimony in opposition, and so I am kind of left wondering how it seems like this is coming to light now. I mean, I've looked at all the different letters of opposition, and I saw the witness registration here, so I'm a little baffled as well, but happy for you all to get together and try to talk out the concerns.
The system can work. It has to go through both sides, and what one misses, the other brings up, and if we can get this resolved, then we'd be happy to see that happen. Thank you. Without further comment, then, it looks like we're ready to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 644. And are there any matters need to be brought up? Seeing none, we are now adjourned.